Welcome to Stoppage Time on a Wednesday match day on the 92.9 The Game Facebook page. And we understand because of some technical issues with Facebook, you might not be watching this live, but pretend that we are.
We're live.
We're live. Now. I could make a mistake, right? Like I could knock over this cup that actually I thought had water in it, but it didn't. And you see, that's what happens when you do live TV. So we're live right now, right? Like, I can do this. By the way, did you notice Aaron's, by the way, is our presenting sponsor of Stoppage Time, where, of course, you will find the perfect choice for your budget and style with top-name brands of furniture, electronics, and appliances. Get started at Aaron's.com or visit one of any 47 Aaron's locations across the Atlanta area. Mike Conti, Jason Longshore, Jimmy Vance. It is a match day. And we're going to get to what's coming up with Ray Otto's tonight on Star 94.1 in a little bit. But let's start with what happened on Sunday. And it's funny, guys, because I was walking around the office here on Monday, and a couple people pulled me aside and goes, man, that was a really tough loss. I didn't see us losing to Cincinnati. And I thought that was telling.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a loss, but it sure felt like a loss.
Yeah, and, no, I mentioned it a couple times. I was like, I kept having to remind myself there was a point.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a loss.
But it really did feel like a loss.
100%.
And look, I mean, it's like we talked about on SDH today. I feel like at least if there is a positive to come out of it, it has started some conversations. And Frank DeBoer and Michael Parker both spoke about it yesterday at the media availability that, you know, look, we're not happy about this. We're talking about it right now. One of the keys that Parker said is we're talking about getting more people in behind, which is a huge glaring issue. But what were your general takeaways from what happened on Sunday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
Too much of the same tempo. And everything felt safe. And that was the biggest thing that I think affected why Atlanta couldn't create many chances. It was play the simple pass, play the short pass, play the easy pass, don't risk anything, and you got what you got. I think you got a team that looked like it was thinking too much when it was playing. And this team plays best when it's freewheeling, when it's off the cuff a little bit, when it's out in open spaces. We didn't get any of that Sunday.
What do you think, Jimmy?
I just thought what struck me was the energy. It was lacking in that match. And I was really surprised. I don't know how you guys were. I was surprised at the starting 11. I thought there would be a lot more rotation for that one going into this Monterey match, but it was almost, you know, I think other than Larenowitz, it was a full starting 11.
Gressel.
Gressel being new, but he's a usual starter.
Right.
It's tough. I mean, you're honestly so stuck in a catch-22 at this point, because if you do the alternative, if you go against Cincinnati with Gordon Wild, with Romario Williams, you're inviting issues that way too, because then you're playing guys who haven't been playing. They don't have that match rhythm. There's not an easy answer to the schedule that you have right now. And I think either way brings up risk. I understand what Frank DeBoer mentioned after the match. I think he was frustrated, and maybe some of the comments kind of came out that way a little bit. But he mentioned it's the home opener. The fans, 70,000 strong, want to see the Stars. You feel a bit of an obligation to play them. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I totally understand that. That's what you would want to have in a perfect situation, and that might have informed some of the lineup choices. But it's also a challenge because of the schedule you have.
The lack of changes in tempo, I think, had a lot to do with just not having the legs. And
yeah.
I feel like we have to be a little bit realistic about where this club is right now with match congestion. The travel has been burdensome.
Yep.
You embrace the opportunity to play in the CONCACAF Champions League, play in international competition, but the travel's been burdensome. And if you are of the belief that a soccer team, the day after a match, the guys that play basically do regen, they work around with resistance bands, you don't really do a full training.
No. Mm-hmm.
And if you're of the belief that the day before a match, You kick it around a little, but you aren't going hard for a couple hours doing a hard training.
Not on a regular basis.
If you're of that belief, then let's look at what Atlanta United has had to deal with over the last 3 weeks. You're in Costa Rica 2 weeks ago tomorrow now, okay? So in the last 13 days, you're in Costa Rica, travel day, no training. Travel day to D.C., day before a match, play the match in D.C., day after DC, travel day. You do a little regen. The guys that did not play, including Julian Gressel, who only played 30 minutes in D.C., do a training. Julian gets hurt on top of it. 5-hour flight to Monterey. Day before the match in Monterey, play the match, travel day coming back. Friday, the Friday before the Cincinnati match, is the first time where you are not in a day before travel or day after match situation.
Right.
That's one day out of 13. Okay, then last Saturday, day before a match, you play Cincinnati, day after the match. Yesterday was the day before a match. And this goes to a point that you made on the full-time report on Sunday. You can't get better if you can't train.
Right.
And look it. Things are similar. Things are different. There are some similarities with personnel. There are differences in what you've got with a new manager. Subtle difference in formation, but maybe a new philosophy. Mm-hmm. You can't build the chemistry if you can't train. You can't. I don't feel like you can build chemistry solely through playing matches. You've got to have that time together.
Your matches become your training, because that's what it is.
And it looks like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can only talk about what you want to work on. You can show video. You can say, this didn't go well last match, let's fix it. You don't have a training session to work on fixing it. You have to go do it in the match on the fly. It's tough. There's not an easy way around it. And this is something that teams learn when they play in Champions League for the first time, whether it is in Europe, whether it's in South America, Africa, Asia, CONCACAF, whatever. Manchester City set a goal to win the Champions League when they were bought by new ownership and invested millions upon millions of dollars into it. They don't have a Champions League trophy yet. PSG, that's all they're trying to do is win a Champions League. They just got bounced in the round of 16. Juventus went and spent a ridiculous amount of money to bring in Cristiano Ronaldo. Not to win Serie A, they won it 7 years in a row to win Champions League. It's not easy. The biggest clubs in the world struggle, and especially Manchester City, PSG, when they came under new ownership and became essentially new clubs in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You had to learn how to deal with this challenge. Pep Guardiola said recently that he looks at Manchester City as like a teenager in this competition right now. They're still learning how to deal with it. We're talking about one of the biggest clubs in the world right now. So for Atlanta United to deal with this with a new manager coming in, with some changes, it's very, very difficult. They will be better next time they participate in the tournament. That doesn't mean tonight that all is lost. It's an opportunity whether you advance or not. It's an opportunity to make a name for yourself as an individual and as a group and change the narrative against one of the best teams on the continent.
Well, let's go back to Cincinnati for a moment, because you didn't get the result you wanted. You certainly didn't score the amount of goals that I think we were all expecting, because Cincinnati defended so poorly against Seattle a week ago. There were positives, though. Mm-hmm. Miles Robinson, and this is something that Darren talked about yesterday with Dukes and Bell. Miles is playing great right now. And Darren pointed out, for the supporters out there that are really hard on Frank de Boer right now, every manager is different. Miles Robinson had trouble getting on the pitch under Tata. Mm-hmm. Under Frank de Boer, he's thriving. But I think Sunday was another demonstration of how he has been, through the first five matches, Atlanta United's most consistent player.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, Jimmy, but I totally agree with that. I think Miles Robinson has been the best player for Atlanta United this season so far.
By far. I mean, he had that great tracking run to shoot it off up the touchline.
Oh, where he left Kikuta Mane in a heap against the signboard.
I mean, it was one-on-one. It was brilliant defending. Yep. And we've seen it, just like we were saying last week with Stephen Glass, Atlanta United too, like Miles Robinson, what a player. Mm-hmm. He started from last year to now, he is been our best player of the season so far. And it's fantastic with his speed and his range. It's great for him and his development, and you've been saying on SDH, it's only a matter of time until he gets called up to the national team.
I think so. I mean, I don't think that talk has started nationally yet. It should. He has all the tools. He has all the skills. And you combine the physicality, the 1v1 defending that we're seeing, with his passing ability that is severely underrated. We talked about it in the game in Monterey a couple of times, that he hit line-splitting passes to Nagby and to Martinez that were so good, I think it took his teammates by surprise. He has that ability too, and he's growing in confidence. He's been the big shining light for Atlanta United so far.
Let's switch gears a little bit as we talk about Cincinnati, but I think also looking forward to tonight and then to Sunday. There's been a lot of discussion about Atlanta United not being able to break down Cincinnati, not able to get anyone behind, not able to really create a good scoring chance off anything other than a set piece. And by the way, they did have two pretty good corner kicks in the second half where on one occasion, Jeff Lorenowitz either barely touched it or just missed it. You didn't have anyone crashing on the back post. So you did have some opportunities in the second half. I think that's been forgotten. But let's go to the whiteboard here and... What do you think? Like, what has been the problem with Atlanta United not being able to get people in behind that back line in the final third and make things work?
So, look, before we go, Cincinnati gave up the goal early. And Alan Koch deserves a lot of credit. He did something that a lot of managers don't do. Instead of trying to get a goal back immediately, he said, no, we're going to sit. We're going to get things right first. And his central midfield dropped deeper. And he said, we're going to... secure where we're at first and grow into the game. How many teams have we seen come into Mercedes-Benz Stadium and give up a goal and look shell-shocked and try to get it back immediately and then give up a second? Cincinnati didn't do that. It was a very smart move by Alan Koch. He deserves a lot of credit. And I've wondered about them tactically a lot this season coming in. He answered a lot of questions with that one. But let's talk about kind of how they did it and talk about what Monterey can do because they play a similar shape. So Cincinnati / Monterey is in the red. Four man on the back, narrow four. Three central midfielders with the number 10 sitting deeper. And that was the biggest thing that Cincinnati did is Alan Cruz sat deeper and deeper early on to help them grow into the game. One striker up here, give you an outlet you need to play long. You've got your wingers out here. Now, if you're Atlanta United, you're in black, and you're in the 3-4-3 shape. Miles Robinson 1v1 with your striker. That's why you play him centrally. Frank DeBoer talked about it after the match. There's been so many questions about why does Miles Robinson play in the middle when Michael Parkhurst used to? It should be the other way around. Not in the system, because if it's a sole striker, Frank DeBoer wants Miles Robinson 1v1 with that player at all times. If the other team is playing two, if they change it up and it's two, then he wants Miles Robinson with one. He wants LGP with one. He wants Parkhurst free. But that's not what we've seen a lot this season. That's why you're seeing Miles Robinson centrally against some teams. He did very well against Funes Mori in Monterey. Funes Mori didn't hurt you. He did well against Fernando Adi. Fernando Adi didn't hurt you. So that's the base. All right, that part's been fine. Defensively, that's good. Your wingbacks here with the opposition wingers. They have to get in behind. If the winger tracks them back, they have to get in behind here. They have to get in the space. Because what does that do? It makes this compact back line split. This outside back, if George Bello tonight, for example, if he's in the lineup, he gets past the winger. The winger's out of the play. Bello gets in here. This guy has to come out to it. All right, so that opens things up. Now you're asking a midfielder to track Pity Martinez or Ezequiel Barca or Tito Villalba. You're asking that midfielder to deal with them. Midfielders are not defenders by nature. Some are, some can handle it, some can't. You want to ask that question of him, though. You create space to run here or here, depending on how you want to do it. Okay, let's say you make this run. He drops. Okay, now what? Right here you've got space. Joseph can check out. Center back then has a really tough decision. Do I come all the way out here to deal with Joseph Martinez? We're seeing a lot more movement from Joseph, right? So he comes out. You've got your backside, inside forward, diagonal run here. You also have players here in Darlington Nagbe and Eric Rometty who both like to get forward when that opportunity comes. Let's say Joseph stays. Let's say the center backs stay. They want to deal with Joseph. Darlington Nagbe comes into this space. Then what do you have in this zone on the field? 3v2. You want 3v2s. You want 2v1s. You want to create those opportunities. That gets the game stretched because then center backs, midfielders have to come over and help. All right, if both of them come, say they get unbalanced and both of them say overreact to it. Boom, you got another run. Boom, you got Joseph. You've got this guy to make runs. You have to get in behind. If you don't get in behind from the flanks, it's going to be really difficult because then you're back to where we were to begin with. And let's move everything back. So, if you do that, let's see, your three central midfielders, you're sitting deep. All right, you're not getting in behind. Then you're asking to win this area of the field. That would be 3 versus 7. That's not good odds. That's not what you want. As good as Pity Martinez is 1v1, as good as Ezekiel Barco is 1v1, you're not winning a lot of battles here. Then you're asking these guys to come up and help. 5v7. What happens when you win the ball here? Or what happens, you take a shot, goalkeeper wins it right here? Then what happens? Who's got that? Nobody, because your midfielders have stepped up to try to help your 3v7. Then you got a break. What happens if your wingbacks go and the ball turns over? Then you've got a break. Does this look a little familiar to what happened late in the match against Cincinnati?
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Safe gets the ball here, and they were a little deeper, not much. Dressel was here, kind of on an island. You had Kenny Safe, who was your winger, get the ball. Shea was beaten. He's 1v1 with LGP. And the way this went down was Safe gets it, turns inside. LGP's out of the play. Fernando Adi makes his run. Miles, I thought from the angles I saw that Miles was in the passing lane here. I thought he had Fernando Adi handled. But you have the run from the backside. Parkhurst saw Adi step central, through ball from Safe in between Lamazin. That's how it can break down. When you're getting 3v7 and it's not working, you're going to start, you're running into a brick wall. So then you commit more numbers forward into that space. You're not going to win through that space if a team's going to sit back deep. The way you do, you get in behind on the outside.
So how much does getting George Bello back potentially tonight help that?
Massive, because he can get in behind a back line, because there's a couple ways to do it. So let's get back to where we were. Let's say Monterey is going to be a little tentative early because they don't want to run themselves into the ground with a big league match coming up this weekend. So, all right, you're back to your base here. You can get George Bello in behind a couple different ways. When the possession is here, because this is where you can rack up a lot of possession percentages. You're 5v1 in the middle. You've got the ball all day long. But if you're playing here, you're not going to score many goals. You can play Bello and have him win 1v1 battles in this space. And he can do that. We've seen it. You can also play that long diagonal that was so effective last year from Parkhurst, from LGP. And Gressel can get in behind too. He's not quite as dynamic getting in behind, but he can do it. His movement off the ball is very good. You hit those long diagonals into the corners. So let's keep with Bello. Parkhurst or Robinson, whoever's here. You hit that ball here. You have a couple different things that can happen. One, your winger's going to have to drop. That takes him out of a quick break. Two, your outside back stretches here. You create space here. Just opening the play up a little bit more, even if Bello doesn't get on the end of it. Say it's one right here. Then what happens? Press, press, step, 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 step. Make it difficult to play out. But you've got to have that penetration from the wings to make any of those things happen. If you don't, you're playing 3v7 in the middle of the field. You're not winning those battles.
That's a good point, though. And I think the one thing that a lot of people have elected to overlook, maybe not even intentionally, this very difficult start for Atlanta United, is Escobar hasn't played a minute.
He stretches it.
And 100%. And Bello, too. And mm-hmm. he's only played one match.
Mm-hmm. Breck Shea is not a guy who stretches the field. Right. Julian Gressel can...
But
it's not
naturally.
His game,
it's
right?
It's not natural.
He stretches the field with his passing right. range more than making those runs.
Right. Well, the long story short is getting Bello and Escobar back will help, but there are still a lot of other unanswered questions about Atlanta United, too. And speaking of questions, let's get to some of your questions now. And I don't know if we're live or not on Facebook. I don't think we are. But we still have questions because our fans are wonderful. So let's get
to them. They find us.
They find us somehow. So let's get to the fan questions brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started right now at TakeSimpleSteps.com. Jimmy.
Guys, we've got one from Twitter. One of the ways we can get these questions from Alex. Will we actually see some lineup rotation tonight?
By the way, when I talk about not getting a lot of time to train and your matches become your training, that is a little bit on Frank de Boer for not rotating the squad more. But I think you've had lack of options because of the Escobar and Bello injuries, because Pogba's not fully fit yet. Mm-hmm. You know, we were going through it on SDH today. Like, you would love to kind of tweak the lineup and move pieces around right now. You're not quite as deep as you thought you would be coming into the season, as you hoped you would be coming into the season.
And the way things have played out, if, you know, beyond the injury part, if you go to DC and get a draw, get a win, you're looking at the Cincinnati match a little differently.
Right.
It is the home opener, and you do want to play your stars, but you have a little bit different feeling. If you go down to Monterey and come out of there 1-0 down or 2-0 down or 2-1 down, you can afford to rest more guys against Cincinnati because it's a different situation. When you're not getting results, you have to keep going with your best players, and it's a cycle that keeps continuing. Not having Bello limited you on the left side. Not having Escobar limited you on the right side. Then having Gressel get hurt in Monterey damaged everything because you had to play Mikey Ambrose on the right. You couldn't give Breck Shea a night off and play Mikey Ambrose on the left. Mm-hmm. Mikey defensively in Monterey did the job, flat out. The criticism of him, I think, is completely wrong. You weren't going to get forward a ton. You're not looking for those things, getting forward down the flanks a lot in Monterey, because you don't want to get exposed. You're defending first. Mikey did the task at hand. But against Cincinnati, you didn't have players to stretch the game. You have to find that tonight. Rotation tonight, I think you still go with your best players available, but you have an honest conversation with every one of them today. And this might go down to before they leave the facility, before they come down to Mercedes-Benz. It might be, how much do you have tonight? Do you have 60? Do you have 90? Do you have 30? How much do you have in the tank tonight? And you get the guys who are up for it. Champions League, this type of night, it's a special night. You've seen special things happen in every Champions League. You want the guys who are ready to go. You don't want to force guys in. If your stars are ready to play, you let them try to solve this for you.
Yeah, I keep going back and forth on this. This is tricky because part of me sees 3-0 aggregate against one of the best teams in the hemisphere. And I like just looking at it realistically, I don't see a way out of this hole tonight for Atlanta United. That's maybe my head.
Right.
My heart, though, is saying, well, now, wait a minute. You know, Red Bull's down 2-0 going on the road at Santos Laguna. They get that square early. Then they fold like a cheap 10.
But they got that square early. Central midfielder at that point in the game.
But we can get into that. But Red Bull's had a chance, okay? Ajax, Manchester United.
Juventus.
Juventus. You know, stranger things have happened and can happen. Rayados right now in kind of a tricky spot themselves, where they're 1 point out of first right now in the Clausura, but they're trying desperately to avoid a difficult first-round matchup. They might be looking ahead to Cholos, which is a road game for them on Saturday. Talk about travel, by the way. You know, you're going from Monterey to Atlanta, out to Tijuana. I don't know if they'll go back to Monterey tonight or if they're,
they're going straight to Tijuana.
Okay, so, I mean, that's a lot of travel. They've been here since Monday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there is an opportunity here tonight. So part of me is thinking, all right, boy, you know, let's get Gordon Wild some time. Let's see what Andrew Carleton can do. Let's give Romario Williams a game. Let's just kind of see. Part of me is thinking, you have a slight chance of doing this. And if you've got a slight chance of doing this, you've got to go for it. Because if they come out of this hole, out of a 3-0 hole to Monterey in advance, this is 1A next to winning MLS Cup. That's number one. This would be 1A on the list of greatest accomplishments this club has ever achieved. And if you have a chance, I think you have to go for it.
Yep.
I also think you'll know if you're at halftime and you haven't scored yet, you're not going
to
do it.
And that's my counter to it. Is I go first choice as much as people are ready to go. And fatigue might change your first choice tonight. But you go with your best lineup that is ready to play. I'd say 60 minutes is where you really start to make hard decisions. If you are 1-0 up at 60, you keep going.
Mm-hmm.
If you've conceded a goal by halftime or 60, you pull guys who need to be pulled. And you've got three subs, and you're pulling guys for fatigue reasons, period. But if you're in it at 60, you keep going. And you go all the way to the end of it until you concede. And when if you concede, then you pack it in, you rest guys.
If you concede, it's probably over at that point. Because you need to find four goals. I don't think you can find four goals against them. But it's like you tweeted today. You just need some early magic. You know, get a quick goal or maybe a weird penalty or something like that. Just like an early lightning strike. If you can get a quick goal on these guys, pressure's all on them at that point.
Yeah.
Think about us up at Red Bull Arena.
It's going the exact up there same situation.
With a 3-0 advantage. You're just trying to hold on and keep Red Bulls from scoring. And the longer that match went, you get into the 60th minute, they haven't scored. You get in the 70th minute, they haven't scored. You get in the 80th minute, they haven't scored. And it's just sucking the life out of them, basically. They scored late, but you knew it was over by then.
Yeah, I thought it was great what Jason said on with Randy and Andy, talking about kind of breaking it down like 30-minute segments. Like, score in the first 30 minutes, and then you score, you know, maybe get a second goal in the 60th minute or so. But just personally, as a fan, you know, you want to be in it to the end and just have roll the dice, you know, just like how Manchester United PSG, they kept it in there until they got a penalty in the 93rd minute. I mean, stranger things could happen. If you get an early goal, momentum, and Monterey is, hey, they're maybe a little tired. They're on the back foot.
They look tired late in that game on Saturday.
They have to switch their mentality. And you crazy. I mean, crazy things happen. I mean, you know, early red card, you never know.
And the difference will be from what Red Bulls faced is you're not going to have a half-empty building for this. you're going to have people in the building. And this is something I have implored people all day. You can make a big difference tonight.
No doubt.
And push this team.
We saw what difference that made in Monterey
in
favor of Rayados. That's a big thing.
When it turns, when those momentum swings happen, when Pity Martinez nutmegs somebody, when Joseph gets a shot, get loud, get going. Give this team some life.
I want to remind you again that Stoppage Time is brought to you by Aaron's, where you'll find the perfect choice for your budget and style with top name brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Get started at Aaron's.com or visit one of the 47 Aaron's locations across the Atlanta area. Even if you go full first choice tonight, you don't have LGP. He's suspended on yellow card. Is it Mikey Ambrose going in there, three in the back, Parkhurst, Larenowitz, Ambrose? Is it Florentin Pogba?
I think Robinson's in there.
You think Robinson's in
there? Yeah, I think Robinson's in there. No
All right, so it's Robinson, Parkhurst, Larenowitz. You think that would be the three?
For me, it's Robinson for sure, no questions asked. It's Parkhurst if he's ready to go.
Okay. What if he's not?
If he's not, you probably go Larenowitz back there, because I think if Pogba can give you 60, you probably take it. If he's not comfortable to do that, and he had blisters in the match against Hartford on the weekend, if he's not, it's Ambrose. It's Ambrose, Robinson, Parkhurst, or it's Pogba, Robinson, Parkhurst. If Parkhurst can't go, it's Larenowitz.
Okay.
I'd love to have Larenowitz in the midfield for Rometty, because I think Rometty would be the other big fatigue question I have.
Could you go Kratz Nagby in the midfield if you're worried about that?
You could, but that would be last resort.
Rometty feels like he's starting to fade a little bit just with fatigue.
He might have recovered. He might be good to go tonight. Yeah. You'd love to have him, because he's the one, when we talked about 3v7 or making those late runs, he's so good at it.
I feel like we kind of forget, like, we assume Rometty's like 40 years old. He's this grizzled veteran. He's only 24 years old. He's not that old.
No.
He's got fresh legs. He's only 3 years older than Miles Robinson.
Yeah.
So
look, when you get in these situations, you have to be able to improvise, because you're going to have tired legs. You're going to have suspensions. You're going to have these things come up. You have to deal with it. And that's really, really tough for Frank DeBoer right now, because he doesn't have years and years with this squad to rely upon. You know, he hasn't seen Mikey Ambrose in that situation until Monterey last time around. But I think now he feels like, hey, if I've got to turn to Mikey, I'm turning to Mikey and it's all good. Can he turn to him as a center back? That's an even bigger ask than playing on the right side. But against a Monterey team that I'm not expecting to throw a lot forward, I think you can get away with it a little bit. And if you go back to the 3v7 type of situation, the other way you flip this, and we saw it last year a ton, if a team's going to sit deep on you and you have three in the back, you have center backs who can step forward and change the play. Mikey Ambrose is a guy who can do that if he's a center back tonight. If you think they're going to sit and you've got Miles Robinson on Funes Mori and that's your best matchup, you're going to go with it, Mikey Ambrose is going to be free a lot of times.
And I think Atlanta United, for the most part, did a good job of limiting chances in Monterey except for the final 10 minutes.
They did a really good job.
When things started to fade. In open play for 80 minutes, Atlanta United was fine, mm-hmm. especially defending. Now, again, you don't have LGP tonight. That's a blow. But I actually somewhat believe that Atlanta United, again, can limit the chances for Barovero. Well, he's their keeper. He won't have any chances.
Hopefully not.
Funes Mori. Maxi Mesa really didn't do anything
no.
in that match. Nothing that really scared you. So maybe I'm overly optimistic. But I think Atlanta United showed that in open play, they can lock these guys down pretty well.
Yeah, you chop it up into 30-minute segments. You win each 30-minute segment. That you do that, you're going to penalties. And you have to get to that point before you can think about a fourth goal. And this is where I think the Red Bulls really messed up last night. They got two goals early. They made it a brand new series with 80 minutes left. It's 0-0 at 80 minutes. You're level completely. You get to the 65-minute mark in the second half, and you pull a midfielder and bring on an attacking player, and it all fell apart. You have to make that decision at the right time. I think on the road, they couldn't do that. Going to penalties was their way to have a chance.
Right.
At home, Atlanta United will have a different set of decisions, but you don't want to get too risky too early. You've got to get to where you have that shot first. You get to two goals at the 75, 80-minute mark, and let's say it's Lorenowitz and Nagby as your two central midfielders. You pull Jeff. You move Barco into the midfield, you bring on another forward, and you just go. And you just hope for magic. And then if you concede, you concede. But you don't do it at 65. Like, you've got to manage the whole 180 minutes.
I'll tell you what, that building would be rocking if that scenario played out, where it's 2-0 in the 75th mm-hmm. minute.
Yeah.
That's where the crowd really becomes a factor,
yep.
because all the pressure would be on Monterey at that point.
Yep.
Remember, too, Monterey 7-1-1 all time against MLS in this competition. That's why I think even if Atlanta United doesn't go through tonight, but if they score multiple goals, I will leave tonight feeling a lot better than I do right now.
I hate moral victories. I think it's a cop-out, but this
but
is a series that
right
has
now.
It.
Yeah. I think
this is
right
a series
now.
That can have it, absolutely, yeah. because, look, if you pull this off, this is the biggest comeback in Atlanta sports. The Braves have never been 3-0 down and came back. They were never 2-0 down in a best of five to come back. The Hawks never came back from a 3-0 down or a 3-1 down even. Like, the Falcons never had that magical playoff come from behind win. I mean, the Seattle one where it flipped late, they blew the lead. That's different. So
that's how we do it here. We blow leads and then come back.
So right now, you got nothing to lose. You go out there, you get a couple goals, you flip this on its head, and you could have a magical night.
No, that actually has me really fired up now. I mean,
that's what I've been trying to do all day. Let's do this.
I'll fully own it, that I really, coming into today, even coming into maybe this afternoon, was very pessimistic about this. I'll say realistic, but just thinking there wasn't really much of a chance. The more and more I'm listening to you, the more and more I'm getting fired up. It would be, it'd be one of the biggest comebacks in MLS history, too. I mean, it would be huge for the league. And you also, it would set up the possibility then, you already have Tigres going through against Santos Laguna in one half of the bracket. It would set you up maybe for Atlanta United against Kansas City in the other half. Mm-hmm. And you would have, for the second straight year, MLS against Liga MX in the final, which would be great. Can we get momentarily into the Darren Eales comment yesterday about MLS being at a competitive disadvantage right now in the CONCACAF Champions League. And then we're going to look ahead to Philadelphia.
I thought Taylor Twellman reiterated on the morning show talking about how much Monterey, it's three times our value of our, I mean,
so,
it,
right.
It is what it is.
Yeah. So I mean, what's the fix?
What can we,
what's the fix?
I mean, open up the purse strings. I mean,
yeah, but how? Like, do you go fourth designated player? Do you expand the salary cap? Do you just do away with the salary cap?
That's just me.
Whatever you do, it's across the board. I've seen people suggest, like, if you're in CONCACAF Champions League, you get more money to work with.
Well, that's
then
not
you mess up the competitive balance. Yeah. So, look, Monterey is not your typical Liga MX team, first off. That's something that people need to understand. Monterey is stretching what Mexican teams are doing. Monterey set their record in the last year for intra-league transfer, Pizarro from Chivas. Mm-hmm. They set their record for external transfer coming in Maxi Meza.
Yeah.
They're spending crazy money in Mexico. Other clubs in Mexico are like, hey, we can't keep up with that. Mm-hmm. So they're a special case. Atlanta is kind of that in MLS right now with what they're spending on their designated players. But they're restricted in the rest of the roster. There's two issues. You have to spend more because you have to build more depth. Monterey has 14 players who have played internationally with national teams. Atlanta has 6, 7, maybe 8. And some of those, there's definitely a difference in level that we're talking about. So that's one issue. Two, and I think you do that through both. I think Jimmy's right. You do that through an increased cap. You figure out what allocation money looks like. For me, allocation money goes into the cap. Teams spend it the way they want to spend it. You have four designated players. You go on. You have to buy the fourth designated player. If teams don't want to do that, then they get some kind of cap relief from the teams that do it. They pay into it a fee, whatever. It's a special allocation fund, whatever. You come up with a way to keep that somewhat equal. Done. That's for smarter people than me. Then you figure out schedule, because that's the other part, is you can do all that. You're still 5 games in playing a team that's 12 games in. It's impossible to be that sharp. It's just, it's not possible.
Yeah.
If the season starts a little bit earlier, cool. You don't have a lot of wiggle room, though, because Mexico is not going to say, yeah, we'll have CONCACAF games during our playoffs. You can't do that. Their playoffs, they do it the way that we talked about that I would propose for MLS. Two legs, midweek, weekend. So it's Wednesday, Saturday series, Thursday, Sunday series through the playoffs. There's no room for CONCACAF. You still have to end CONCACAF about where you end it now, mm-hmm. beginning of May. Maybe you condense it a little bit more. You're going to have to deal with Mexico on Copa MX and scheduling about that. That's a little more doable. Or you do it in the fall. Or you do it late summer, early fall, and it crosses over to the beginning of the Apertura season in Mexico. MLS teams have pushed back on that because you're getting into the stretch run for the playoffs. So they don't really want that one. If you're going to do it in the spring, MLS has to start earlier. They have to let teams train earlier. And you're going to have to figure out the right balance of league matches to CONCACAF matches. We've seen teams reschedule league matches before. It's kind of mixed results. I mean, Toronto rescheduled games last year. It hurt them in league later. It helped them, I guess, some in CONCACAF. But that was a veteran team. I don't know if that would help Atlanta in the situation.
You don't think the format of the tournament can be tweaked in any way to maybe shorten it a little bit? Like, you wouldn't want to go back to straight knockout or
No, you got to do two legs. I mean, there's nothing else you can do with that. And I don't think you cut it back to just a quarterfinal, semifinal, final. It's not fair to the rest of CONCACAF. You have to have the Independientes, the Herediano's, the Supremes.
Well, that's the other thing, too. It's not just Liga MX that you're worried about. It's Costa Rica, it's Guatemala, it's Dominican Republic. You're dealing with all the domestic leagues.
You have to find that balance because CONCACAF is run by Mexico, United States, Canada. But you have all the voting power of everybody else, but the economic power of those three. So if Mexico says, we're not doing this, everybody's going to go along with it. If the U.S. says, we're not doing this, and they get Mexico to side with them, everybody's going to go along with it. It's a tough balance. This is the best format I think you can have right now, but it's not easy for the U.S. It's not easy for MLS because of it. You can't go back to a group stage because you had that where it was fall and in knockouts in the spring like now, but MLS teams don't want to play games when they're going into their stretch run in the postseason, so it is what it is, and European teams have these challenges too.
No doubt.
South American teams have it.
No doubt. We're going to get to one more fan question here in a moment. Yep. Jimmy's going to dig for that right now. And then we're going to look ahead to Philadelphia coming up on Sunday. One interesting scheduling quirk, by the way, for Atlanta United. This will be Sunday will be their seventh match in 24 days. After Sunday, if they are knocked out of CONCACAF Champions League tonight, they will play one match in 26 days. Yep. And that'll be the match in Columbus. I think regardless of what happens tonight, regardless of what happens on Sunday, I feel good about Sunday, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Two things. I think, first of all, the guys who are called up internationally, I see no problem, no drawback at all to a guy like Pitti Martinez being able to spend some time with Lionel Messi, obviously. And Pitti, by the way, is not the only one who's going to be called up in this window.
Yeah.
But there's no drawback to that at all. I think that's a very, very good opportunity
yes,
for him
please,
to get
please do not criticize that one.
It's
amazing to think about that a Atlanta United player called up to the Argentina national
team. Any MLS player.
I mean, yeah. The new movie's going to be, if this goes down and you get a match with Argentina with Messi and Pitti playing together, the movie's going to be how Pitti got his groove back.
Yeah.
Flat out. I mean, how do you get better right now? How do you feel good about yourself right now?
Right.
Play it next to that guy.
Right, right. So that's a good thing, okay? And you're going to have week-long stretches of solid chemistry building, mm-hmm. bonding, whatever it is. Because even if you think about it, in training camp, you know, they got together with their new manager on January the 15th. Within 2 weeks, they're heading out to California to play games. So this is why I feel a little bit better about what's to come for Atlanta United and why I feel like, and I have to be talked out of this morning on SDH. I feel like now, okay, maybe it is reasonable if you go to Michael Parkhurst and say, we're going to need you for 90 more. Because you're going to have basically 1 month where you play one match.
This is where you rally. This is where you go to the big players in this team and you say, what do you have for me tonight? And you ask them to lead the way. This is where big players step up in these kind of moments. If you get through, it's an amazing moment, and I probably won't be able to talk tomorrow because I'll be screaming all night if they do that. If you don't, you can still feel a lot better about Sunday.
But I think it can change, too, with a good win, you know, 1-0, 2-0, and then go on the weekend, you win that one. I think it changes going into the international break.
We can talk like that. We can talk about this, but in the locker room, it is we have an opportunity to do something historic tonight.
All right, let's get to another fan question. We apologize. It's been a kind of a janky show today because Facebook is down, not us.
Did they plug Facebook back in yet?
Nope.
Ah.
Okay. We appreciate you finding a way to get questions to us. And one thing we always do when stuff like this happens is as you watch, whenever you're watching, and you want to type in some questions, Jason, Jimmy, and I will go back in there. We'll answer your questions. We'll type them out. So don't worry, we will get to you. But the fan questions is always brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com.
Let's see, one from Tyler Rice. He says, after the Philly match and international break, could we see a potential formation change, a 4-3-3/4-2-3-1 instead of the 3-4-3? Just seems like the midfield is getting outnumbered at times when relying so much on only two central midfielders.
Tyler didn't get to watch the whiteboard segment, so I'm going to give him a pass.
You could, because you're always going to move things around to find what's working best, but you don't have to. I'm so pushing back on the formation's the only thing that's wrong. If you're not getting penetration and you're not getting in behind defenders playing a deep line, you can be in any possible formation you've seen any team ever line up in, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference. You're going to play a possession style. You're going to try to limit the opportunities for the opposition through that possession style. That's what you're going to do. You can do that out of a 4-3-3, a 3-4-3, a 3-5-2. You can do that out of any formation you want. If you're not getting penetration, it doesn't matter. That's the key here. It's not about numbers. It's not about, okay, in that scenario, let me give you the flip side. All right, you're going to play four in the back. You're going to play two center backs. You play up against a team that plays two forwards. You're going to leave two center backs, two forwards, 1v1 a lot of times. You don't want that. So then you're going to have one of your central midfielders drop in. What are you back into? You're back in three in the back. formation is not that important. It really, really isn't. Not the way the modern game is anymore. Back in the day where you played in a straight line and that was all you did, yeah, you wanted to set those straight lines up in a way that worked. Now, it's in Technicolor. You're playing everywhere. You're playing all over the place. You have to have center backs who can play with the ball at their feet like midfielders did in the 70s. You have to be able to do everything. It's all about soccer players now. You want to give them the philosophy that's correct first. You then want to have the match tactics to work against the opponent you're playing. And then you want to have them in a shape that works for the philosophy and the match tactics. But you have to build the first two. That's the most important things.
All right, Philadelphia coming to town. St. Patrick's Day night. It's a Sunday, so pace yourselves this year. It's not like last year when we had it on a Saturday and Vancouver and Kendall Waston went nuts. But Philadelphia is another team.
Was he drinking the green beer?
Kendall Waston?
Yeah.
I doubt it.
I don't know. I doubt that reaction, he might have been.
It's hilarious.
He was a little confused.
Yeah, more than a little. But, you know, Philadelphia, last time they came to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, they had two red cards because someone decided to call the referee a cheat, allegedly. And Harris Madunian is back with them. But their best player is out on red card, and they're struggling.
He can drink the green beer.
Fabian can drink the green beer if he comes to Atlanta. I doubt he will because he's on red card, so he can't play. But it's a struggling team that made some moves in the offseason. One of those moves now we don't even get to see on Sunday. I feel really good about Atlanta United in that spot, perhaps even a little bit better than I felt about them against Cincinnati, because the one thing we know about Jim Curtin, twice last year against Atlanta United, to his credit, he decided to play wide open, not park the bus, not load the box or anything like that. At their own peril, they tried to play wide open against Atlanta United. They got burned in two losses, but playing 9-on-11, they actually look kind of sporty against Atlanta United.
First half in Philadelphia was wide open, too. Yeah. They converted their chances. That's the thing about Philly the last 2 years. They're not converting chances. Last year, they should have scored 7 or 8 more goals than they did, according to expected goals. So far this year, they have the highest expected goal total in the league, and they have 1 goal. They should have scored, I think, 4.5.
Yeah.
They're not converting. But Philly is also a prime example of formation is not as important because they are shifting to a 4-4-2 diamond. They played 4-2-3-1 under Jim Curtin historically. Ernst Tanner, the sporting director, wants them in a 4-4-2 diamond. It's not working. Harris Madunian is by himself. He's not getting the support. They had to make a change. Warren Craval came into the lineup in the second match. Better until Fabian stomped on Johnny Russell. That's kind of a problem. It was better up until that point because he was dropping. The shape looked a little more coherent. You go back and look at the average positions of the players in the first game against Toronto. Your back two center backs make sense. Nothing else made sense. It's like dots on a page all over the place. It's better, but who's going to pull the strings? That's the question I have. Or are they going to say, you know what, we're going to get out of this. We have to play a 4-4-2, and we're going to do what Cincinnati did and play a 4-2-3-1. I don't know. We'll see.
What do you think, Chief?
I like our chances in this one to really kind of erase that memory of FC Cincinnati and the style and speed it up more. I think we'll have a point to prove going into the international break and hopefully score a couple goals and hopefully get a clean sheet as well.
Do you feel like it's a must win?
Yeah.
Sunday? I mean, like true must win.
Yes, I think must win. I think it's a big one, not what I thought it was at the beginning of the year.
As must win as a game in March can be. I mean, it's not must win like.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, for me, yes, because you got to win your home game. You got to win your home matches in MLS. I mean, I can't expect us to go on the road like last year and have that a road record. Mm-hmm. You know,
100%.
We need like the FC Cincinnati. Those are drop points. You have to win your home matches in this league be in contention and get a home match for the playoffs.
I wanted to pull up this Darren Eales quote from yesterday on Dukes and Bells, just to make sure I have it right. Sometimes Darren is cryptic without realizing how cryptic he really is. He said, tomorrow, and he said this yesterday, tomorrow is a tough game because Monterey are a great side. We have a Philly game this weekend in front of our fans where we hope to see that attacking football that we're used to. I think Darren might be getting onto something here, that these guys realize they have an opportunity coming up on Sunday now where you have Bello back. It doesn't sound like you're going to have Escobar back, but at least you're going to have Bello back.
Right.
Can you get in behind Trusty, McKenzie, Cravall?
Well, the outside backs especially, and that's where Bello will have an opportunity against Philadelphia. And we've seen a little bit of Jack Elliott here lately, too. And right. Elliott is not exactly fleet of foot. You get him moving laterally, you're going to have some opportunities. You take advantage of Madunian and by himself. If you get Cravall separated from him, you get Bedoya separated from him, you're going to be able to attack that space.
Yeah. So that is Sunday night at, I keep forgetting, is it 7 or 7.30? I keep forgetting.
I think it's 7.
That's Sunday night at 7. We're on at 6.30 on Star 94.1. Tonight we're on at 7.30 on Star 94.1, 8 o'clock kickoff. Then you get the international break. Next road fixture will be in Columbus at the end of March. Then another week off if you aren't in CONCACAF. You play at New England, home to Dallas, and then you're home to, I forget who. It doesn't really matter right now. As far as your question about is it a must win, the thing that makes me feel a little bit better about what's going on right now for Atlanta United. So no one in the Eastern Conference has been that good.
No, for sure.
You know, no one has 6 points. Seven teams are going to make the playoffs. This isn't Toronto where you had so many injuries suffered in CONCACAF that you're playing yourself out of everything right now. It's not that. I've seen that comparison a couple times. I've even heard some members of the club use that comparison.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a valid comparison at all.
I disagree.
But you haven't played yourself out of anything yet. You have not lost at home. You have not lost at home. You haven't won on the road, but you haven't lost at home. You know, we'll see what happens tonight. I think there is a real opportunity, like we said, even if you don't go through, you can get something positive tonight. That's a building block for Sunday. And basically, you're looking at Sunday now as the finish line of a marathon. You know, and starting the day after Philadelphia, you can start training for your next marathon or you can eat a couple donuts because you're going to have time to do whatever. And that's going to be a very, very vital reset point. And I think also from a mentality standpoint, even with our fans, like, I'm surprised at the level of negativity right now. I think it's good to be passionate. I understand the expectations are very high. It's like I've said a couple times, I really dislike the booing on Sunday. I know that some of you will say it was directed towards a specific thing. It doesn't matter. When players are walking off the pitch and they hear boos, they can't differentiate who the guy in section 233 is booing. I don't like that at all. But the crowd can have a real impact on the match tonight. And I really hope that what I've been seeing about tickets going for way below face value or maybe going unused, I really hope that's not the case. This is the biggest international match Atlanta United has ever played at home. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest international match that Atlanta United has ever played at home. And if they get the same result they got in Kennesaw against Herediano, they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen.
Absolutely can. Everybody said, you know, Juve yesterday, yeah, they had Cristiano Ronaldo. You got Joseph Martinez, who has scored more goals at a rate than anybody we have seen in this hemisphere.
And by the way, you have a ticked-off Joseph Martinez,
mm-hmm.
too.
He usually performs pretty well when he's angry.
No doubt about it. Good luck with that, Ray Ottos.
You got players who have a lot to prove in this squad right now. And they, you know, as I've said, I think all day, they need your energy tonight. They do. They are tired. No getting around it. They're going to be tired no matter who's out there tonight. They need energy. They need that boost. They get an early goal. Keep pushing them on. You never know what can happen in these games.
All right. Like I said, we're going to come back in once this gets posted. And thank you for bearing with us today. And thank you for watching us not live. If you've gotten
No thanks to Facebook.
Facebook, unplug it and plug it back in.
Right.
Wait like 10,
yeah.
15 seconds.
They did a South Park episode on that.
Yeah.
You go to the cave, you unplug it, you plug it back in. It's very easily. But if you've made it this far, go ahead and type in a question on the bottom of your screen, and Jason, Jimmy, and I will go back in. We'll answer your questions. We'll type it out, even if it's not tonight. We'll get to it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But we certainly appreciate you sticking with us. We hope to be live next Wednesday, 2 p.m., No midweek matches next week, fortunately, so we'll be able to kind of concentrate on what happens against Philadelphia, go through the international break, and maybe take an early look ahead to Columbus. Want to remind you again that Stoppage Time today has been presented by Aaron's, where you'll find the perfect choice for your budget and style with top-name brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Get started at Aaron's.com or at one of 47 Aaron's stores across Metro Atlanta. Star 94, 1 at 7:30 tonight. Jason and I will be on the air with the Five Stripes Countdown. For Jimmy and Jason, I'm Mike. We'll see you next week for a live, hopefully, version of Stoppage Time.